Each moment we can ask, is this expressing Buddha nature or not? This is just a little note from Heejin Kim from the book Dogen Kigen, Mystical Realist, a kind of classic Dogen not exactly commentary on Dogen's works, but just exploration of Dogen's thought. Actually, a really great book, I think, and there's a large section, a whole chapter in the book called Religion and the Metaphysics of Buddha Nature. So it goes through a lot of the Buddha Nature fascicle and ties it into Indian Yogacara and Tathagata Garbha and Being Time. In that particular chapter, Heejin Kim looks at Dogen's Uji, or Being Time, as another version of Buddha Nature. So, a lot of the same things that we're talking about here, but one of the things he says that struck me in that chapter, he says, Dogen was primarily a religious thinker. He never really defines religion here, but I think he's referring to religion as a practice as opposed to a philosophy. Dogen was primarily a religious thinker who regarded the act of philosophizing as an essential element of his religiousness. This can be shown, for example, by the fact that while Dogen used such traditional Buddhist terms as mind-only, citta-matra, dharma, nature, dharmata, thusness, ta-ta-ta, and Buddha nature, Buddha-ta, synonymously throughout his works, he regarded Buddha nature as particularly fitting and as central, perhaps for the reason that the term retained more personal, affective, and existential connotations when compared with the impersonal, speculative, and transcendental connotations of the other terms. The Buddha nature's more personal and maybe experiential than even mind-only or dharma nature or thusness. Because we're talking about the Buddha nature of living beings. Zen Buddhism is, after all, a religion, not a philosophy alone. Dogen proves this abundantly.
Is that saying that for Dogen, considering these things and philosophizing about them is almost like a devotional practice?
We could hear it like that. I mean, we could treat it like that. We could treat a class like this as a devotional practice, which maybe you are at this point, showing up out of devotion as the class gets thinner. But I think it means maybe more. We have to do this difficult philosophical investigation in order to practice completely and fully. To understand our religious practice completely, we need to understand the dialectics of Buddha nature and emptiness and so on. That's how I'm hearing it, that it's kind of like a necessary thing. But I like the idea that actually that the philosophical study itself is not just to support our practice, you know, on the cushion and with each other, but actually the study itself could be seen as a devotional practice that's not leading anywhere or trying to accumulate a new understanding that then we bring into our zazen or our daily life, but that the actual study itself is just a complete expression in itself. Yeah. Therefore, since there's nothing to get and we don't need to understand something that we haven't already understood, we continue. And maybe we understand something along the way. I think we're in the middle of this whole commentary by Dogen about the fourth and fifth ancestor. You may remember that the fifth ancestor, newly reborn from a borrowed womb, meets the fourth ancestor who asks, "What's your name?" And he says, "I have a name, but it's not an ordinary name." "What name is that?" "It is Buddha nature," said the boy. "You have no Buddha nature," said the fourth ancestor. "You say no Buddha nature because Buddha nature is emptiness," the boy replied. So that's the story we're in the middle of here. We're, I think at the place where it says the fifth patriarch, fifth ancestor said, "It is Buddha nature." This is after the last, we ended up with, when the fourth ancestor said, "What name is that?" "What is an affirmation?" He is whatting an affirmation. And we talked about how Dogen uses these words like "what" and "who," not as questions, but as affirmations or statements about the ineffable. And I think maybe Carl Bielefeld even mentioned this is Dogen's ancient version, similar maybe to the modern and becoming kind of ancient example of Abbott and Costello, who's on first, which I was going to try to look up the whole dialogue and bring it in, but I didn't have time. But have anyone heard that? It's actually amazingly, it's quite long and involved. It's a whole kind of skit of Abbott and Costello. Basically, it's like they're commenting on a baseball game, I think, right? And so the names of the people standing at each base are like who, what, and when, or something like that. I don't remember the details. But then the commentary is like, so who's on first? Meaning the person who's on first base is named, his name is who. So who's on first? And you know, the other one treats that as a question. Yeah, so who's on first? Yeah, who's on first? Oh, what do you mean? No, what is on second, you know? And it's, you know, it's probably on YouTube or something available to watch. And quite funny. They really work it out. But it's that same thing of that confusing and mind-twisting conversation of using these words like who and what as basically like nouns. And names for activities and so on, like whatting. So here the fifth ancestor says, meaning my name, but literally he says, "It is Buddha nature." Zei Busho, we talked about. Zei means like, is completely, it is, something like that. Just in an ordinary sense, but Zei also can have that meaning of like just completely this. And of course, Dogen uses it that way, turns it that way. Fifth ancestor said, "It's Buddha nature." Dogen says, essentially this means that it, Zei, or in parentheses they say affirmation, is Buddha nature. It, this itself, is Buddha nature, because it is what it is the Buddha nature. So now he's just going to start combining all these words that he's been talking about. It is what, it meaning this itself is, which kind of implies a kind of concrete, specific manifestation right here and now. This is what, and what in kind of implies the ineffable ungraspability of this. So all these words do really actually do have different senses, connotations, implications that are all pointing towards Buddha nature. Buddha nature is this here and now. It's what, we can't say what. And because it is what, it is the Buddha nature, but can it be fully comprehended only in what name? It's kind of like, is it limited to what? When affirmation, or it, is not affirmable, it is still the Buddha nature. Which, so literally, it's like, when it is not it, it is still the Buddha nature. This may be sounding somewhat familiar now, this kind of way Dogen's talking. He just doesn't want to leave us, you know, even slightly resting in any particular place. Like now, okay, it, this very moment here and now is Buddha nature, but even when it is not it, it's still Buddha nature. Hence, although it is what is Buddha, when that is fully broken through and cast off, or dropped off, it is without fail a name. So he's combining basically all these different words he's been talking about in the past page, half page, right? So it's a kind of a nice sentence. It's combining it all. When it, or let's see, hence, although it is what, it is what, is Buddha, when that it, what, Buddha, is fully dropped off, it is, without a fail, a name. I don't know if you can feel the like workings of that sentence, you know. It, what, Buddha, we combine all that, and then we say, okay, now we got it. It's kind of like a combination of like it, what, and Buddha. That's what Buddha nature is. But then you drop all that off. So now there's nothing left. But it's actually without fail. At that point, it's a name. It kind of brings it right back, right? When you drop everything off, actually there's a name. which is kind of like the logic of the Diamond Sutra. Where throughout the Buddha, the Diamond Sutra, the Buddha says, he brings up all these different terms like a being. So we say, the way the Buddha, I think, talks in the Diamond Sutra is something like being, like say like person, as no person has the Tathagata taught, thus we call it, or name it, a person. Over and over again, that type of sentence keeps repeating with different, you know, person, marks, beings, and so on. Person, as no person has the Tathagata taught. Thus, we call it person. So, there's actually no person. But even though there's no person, we call it, we name it a person. So that expression of the Diamond Sutra is a little bit like this, where we drop off everything, we drop off it, what, and Buddha, and then there's a name. After it's all dropped away, can't say anything, now we say something. We can, and we must say, we must name it. It is without fail a name. Here the name is Jiao. which refers back to the earlier part of the story where they're introducing the fifth ancestor as the old, you know, when he was the old man who needed to find a womb to be reborn. The girl whose womb he borrowed was the Zhao family. So they're just, when they're doing his biographical thing, they say, she was from the Zhao family. So that was, but Zhao happens to mean all pervading. Like every Chinese character has some meaning. So it's really Dogen's like bringing every key word from the whole story here. Although it is what is Buddha, when that is fully broken through, dropped off, it's without fail a name. Here the name is Zhao, or all-pervading. Yet this name is not received from your father or from your ancestors or your mother. It has no resemblance to your mother's name and can, of course, never be compared with any other person's name. Of course. Even though it's all-pervading. Dogen is having a grand old time. The fourth ancestor said, "You have no Buddha nature." This utterance reveals that although you are not someone else, you are entirely you. You are Mu Buddha nature, Mu Busho. So in this translation, they're leaving the no, untranslated as Mu, to maybe make the connection to this common usage of Mu in the classic Mu Koan, for example, which is actually going to, of course, appear in here because it's about Buddha nature. When we say, the classic commentaries on the Mu Koan, does a dog have Buddha nature? The answer is no, or in Japanese, Mu. And the commentaries usually say, this no is not the no of like yes and no. It's a kind of all-pervading, cutting through everything, no. It's the no of just like, let it go and drop it off. Not like, no, a dog doesn't have Buddha nature. It's not like that kind of no. It's just, does a dog have Buddha nature? As they, you know, in at least at Bukokuji, where I practiced, most people were working on Mu Koan, actually, in Zazen. There's a kind of a Soto Rinzai blended practice. So I was personally doing Shikantaza practice. You kind of work it out with the teacher what practice you're doing. But I was kind of a minority. Most people were doing Mu, and in this particular teacher, Tangen Harada Roshi, at least the rumors that circulated in the monastery was like, nobody ever like passes Mu and goes on to another koan. You just work on Mu for your entire life, which is a little different than other Rinzai schools where you kind of pass it and you go on. So people are just doing this Mu thing for like decades and, you know, they're a lifetime practice, which is kind of neat, and that it's not about like, you know, getting some particular answer. You just say Mu to everything forever. That's it. And it's not about getting anywhere. And you know what? That's kind of like the spirit of Shikantaza. So it's maybe a Soto version of Mu practice where there's nothing to pass. Anyway, I think this is probably common in Rinzai monasteries. You know, everybody goes to Dokusan at once. During Zazen, they ring a bell, and in this style, it's like everyone in the Zendo leaps off their seat immediately. There's no bowing to cushions or anything, and runs full speed to the Dokusan room as a traditional expression of enthusiasm to go meet the teacher. whether you actually want to or not, it's become a form to run haphazardly. Zafus go flying. It's really something compared to our style. It's like, this is like ridiculously like sloppy and what happened to the form? There's a lot of emphasis on the form, but when it's time for Dokusan, everything goes and you just, you know, it's kind of a roll down. Ding, 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 but on that first ding, boom, the whole Zendo like just erupts and this divergence, but it's fun to recall these times. And you take turns carrying the stick, the awakening stick. So you're just basically doing kinhin around the Zendo with the stick during zazen. And you don't know when this bell is going to ring, right? So if you're the junko, the person carrying the stick, and the bell rings, you immediately have to yourself run and like behind the altar, like, so there's an altar in the center like this. You have to kind of run and stand right up close against the altar or you'll be trampled. And after everybody goes by, then a few people may be left in the Zendo and you keep walking with the stick. Anyway, when you get there, then you're down in the line at the Zendo and you're immediately in the... Roshi rings the bell, you go in and you present, you know, your practice, what you're working on. And if you're doing mukoan, usually even though it's kind of a private thing, you know, the Dokusan room's like way back behind the kaisando, and there's no door to the room, but it's pretty far away. But even so, you know which people are working on mukoan because you hear, even from the Zendo, hundreds of yards away, you hear in the distant room, "Moo!" And then ding, ding, end of Dokusan. What's that?
Repeated,
and then the next person. Well, not necessarily, you know. Some people would do it louder than others. Some people, oh. But I bring this up because that's the kind of mood. It's not like that, you know, you're basically saying, in Japanese, you're saying, no! But this is not the no of like, yes and no. It's just the complete expression of like, anything I'm thinking about of what I'm doing here and what you're doing here and what we're doing, regarding all of that, no! Nethi, do you have any moo stories from your koan practice?
Slightly less. in the American style, in Australia, it's the same thing. They're like, when the bell goes, jump up and run out.
Mm.
It's quite a thing to summon up that enthusiasm, or, you know, to just do that.
Mm-hmm.
And like, there's a line, it's the bustle, it's like, wow, someone going in front of me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a race, yeah, right. A running race.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people's, you know, sandals
right.
Are flying.
Yeah.
Yeah, which kind of, in a way, raises your, maybe, adrenaline, if nothing else. So when you go in the room, you really have something to express. But could you hear other people's moos from the outside?
Banging and thumping.
Yeah, so that kind of no. So here we're saying, Dogen saying, this utterance, you have no Buddha nature, reveals that although you are not someone else, you are entirely you. You are no Buddha nature. You should know and you should study what is the temporal occasion now, or what is the time now when you are Mu Busho, when you are no Buddha nature. Are you no Buddha nature when you have fully attained Buddhahood? Are you no Buddha nature when you go beyond Buddhahood? Do not restrict no Buddha nature by groping around for it. And you know, so these are particular times, right? Are you no Buddha nature at the time that you attain Buddhahood? Are you no Buddha nature when you go beyond Buddhahood? Do not restrict by groping around for it. At times you practice and realize that no Buddha nature is a single time of samadhi. So we're emphasizing, we're back to this thing about time and temporal conditions. One time samadhi, you know, one-pointed presence in the moment. But at this particular time, you know, Dogen's into that, right? In Jijiyu Zamai, he's like, when even for one person at one moment practices Zazen, you know, everything is completely in accord with everything else. So it's a practice for Dogen is always about this one moment. It's not kind of like in practice in general. It's more like it's always about this right now. At times you practice and realize that mu, Buddha nature, is a single time of samadhi. You should be asking and should be articulating, am I no Buddha nature when Buddha nature attains Buddhahood? Am I no Buddha nature when Buddha nature begins aspiring for enlightenment? You should have even the temple pillars asking. You should be asking the temple pillars. You should have the Buddha nature asking too. You should have Buddha nature asking at what time Buddha nature becomes Buddha. And this thing about asking the temple pillars is, you know, referring to a story that a monk asked Sherto, what's the meaning of Bodhidharmas coming from the West? As you know, they commonly would ask. And Sherto said, ask the temple pillar. And the monk said, I don't understand. And Sherto said, I don't understand either. So there's a lot of references to things like, you know, I can't tell you, but like the temple pillar will tell you. You know, it's not in the realm of conceptual understanding. But in this case, it's not just that you should ask the temple pillar, but you should have the temple pillar ask. This is... Dogen is saying. Hence the utterance, no Buddha nature, reverberates far beyond the chambers of the fourth ancestor. It was seen and heard in Huang Mei. It circulated freely in Zhaozhou. It was exalted in Da Gui. And so he's saying, this true understanding of Buddha nature is not just in this one conversation, but it's also in these. Huang Mei is the fifth ancestor's city and temple. Zhaozhou is the city of Zhaozhou, who is the classic "Does a dog have Buddha nature?" story, and Da Gui is Guishan's place. And so all he's saying, the places of all of those teachers are going to appear later in this essay. Basically, these are all people who express Buddha nature. Authentically, according to Dogen, even though he hasn't brought them up yet. You must devote yourself without fail to the truth of no Buddha nature. Never cease in your efforts. Although with no Buddha nature you may have to grope your way along, there is a touchstone. What? Touchstone or standard? I think he uses another name, signpost. Anyone know the word touchstone in English? I wanted to look that up. We don't use that word very much. A touchstone for something?
We did this once.
It's in Bendawa.
Is it about testing if gold is true or not?
Maybe that's where it originally comes from. Almost like a reference or something that we can refer back to, or we can use a signpost or a standard. A standard is something like a reference point or a place that we can use to a standard with which we can then relate to other things.
That's what Tanahashi uses, a standard.
Standard. Mm-hmm. So I guess we don't say, you know, reference point the way we've sometimes been using it recently here. Is this, you know, a fixed mark by which we grasp independent the existing thing. So we're not talking about it in that way. It's more like it's something we can come back. It's maybe like a refuge. There is this standard, signpost, touchstone, refuge. What? Whenever we get lost, if we're wondering what's going on, just come back to what is going on. What's happening? Oh, yeah. What's happening? There is a temporal condition, you. A time for Buddha nature right now is you. There is an entrance into its dynamic functioning, affirmation, or it, zay. There is a common name, jiao, all-pervading. It is a direct and immediate access. The fifth ancestor's utterance, you say no Buddha nature because Buddha nature is emptiness. Remember, that's what he says in the original story. You say no Buddha nature because Buddha nature is emptiness. That articulates clearly and distinctly the truth that emptiness is not no. No or nothing or non-existence are all translations of mu. And this is an important point that Dogen's making, is that emptiness is not nothingness. Emptiness is not no. This is important in all of all Buddhist teachings. And Dogen's, it's maybe one of his main points that he keeps circling back to in this essay, that particularly Buddha nature as emptiness is not a non-existent kind of nothingness. Emptiness doesn't mean nothingness, right? It's, I think I maybe mentioned before here about there's this word non-implicative negation that Buddha nature, the emptiness of Buddha nature is not a non-implicative negation, meaning like non-implicative negation doesn't necessarily mean nihilism, but it's very close to the edge. And you know, the Nagarjuna's logic, like say prasangika madhyamaka, the method is to just negate and not posit anything else. It's like you look for it here, you look for it here, you can't find it there, you can't find it, you know, something that you're looking for, like existence, you can't find it anywhere. So therefore, we just negate the thing. You know, if you're like looking for this book, you know, there's various logic you can do to prove that actually there is truly no book, and that's it, period. And that's what you call a non-implicative negation. It's a negation of the truly existent book, or the book the way it actually, that we think there's a book here. It's negating that, but it doesn't imply that there's something else. For example, a non-implicative negation is there's no book, the end, as opposed to there's no book, but there is a dependently arising appearance of a radiant book. in this world, right here and now. That's not a non-implicative negation. But a non-implicative negation means there's nothing positive implied by this negation. You understand? It's kind of a nice term to talk about a certain kind of emptiness teachings that are actually really effective. There's something really great about non-implicative negations. I think when people use them, like Nagarjuna and Chandrakirti and all, they're using them intentionally to make sure that we have just no ground to stand on at all. And that's a wonderfully liberating place to stand. There's no ground at all. Right? But then Buddha nature teachings are they're not non-implicative negations. They leave us a very nice empty ground to stand on, but it's a ground like radiant awareness. That's not a non-implicative negation. That's not nothing. Buddha nature is radiant awareness, but if you try to get a hold of it, there's nothing graspable there whatsoever. That's it. But you could say maybe that's an implicative negation. We negate some fixed awareness, but that implies that there is this empty awareness. So this is all to say that this is what Dogen's doing, a kind of classic Buddha nature, making a classic Buddha nature statement by saying, emptiness is not no. Or emptiness is not nothing. In uttering Buddha nature emptiness, one does not say half a pound, one does not say 8 ounces, one says mu. Which maybe we could say is like, well, we're comparing this and that, we're getting caught up in the details. Is it actually 8 ounces or half a pound, which are the same thing? But you don't say either one. You don't say it's like this, or it's a little, we could see it from this angle or this angle. You just moo. Because it's emptiness, you do not say emptiness. Because it's moo, you do not say moo. You say moo because it's Buddha nature emptiness. So you can just drink in these words.
So in the Chinese characters, how is the distinction made between mu and empty?
Yeah. They're two different characters.
And are they? Does each use in English of mu equal that character in each?
No, they actually are a little different in Chinese.
Other characters, not just
for emptiness.
For these two words, mu and emptiness.
Yeah, these are kind of the standard. I think they're pretty good in Chinese. So emptiness is ku, maybe we'll get back to this. Maybe I'll mention now that ku is basically everybody in China from early on. Not maybe from the very beginning, but pretty soon it became the standard translation. Just like emptiness in English is a pretty standard translation for shunyata. But in Chinese, the standard translation for shunyata is ku. And the Chinese character actually means, it can mean empty, but also means sky. Or like space or sky. Which is kind of nice because sky is a little different than a non-implicative negation, right?
And
sky is like vast spaciousness.
Yeah, boundless. Mm-hmm.
Boundlessness, yeah. So cause, as you use boundlessness, maybe picking up on the Chinese character ku. And Chinese airlines, when they write on the, we have like American Air and stuff. The Chinese airlines on the tail of the airplane, they have that character for emptiness. Mm-hmm. Like China Air would be like China emptiness. It's that character Ku on the painted on the airplanes, because it means sky. And Mu literally means like no or nothing. And it's, yeah, Mu is never actually used to translate Shunyata, but it's closely related. So in the Heart Sutra, they use both characters. Every time it says emptiness is form, they use Ku. But then when they say no eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, that's Mu. Mu is really just a pure negation, and Ku is this emptiness. And I recently came across a reminder that Shunyata in Sanskrit is what we translate as emptiness. Shunya, and again, the ta means the ness. So shunya means empty. Shunyata is emptiness, the kind of nature of the empty. And empty, shunya means full. It can mean actually full, which is the opposite of empty, right? It has one connotation of shunya is full, and also kind of like bloated. So bloated is kind of neat, because it's kind of like a balloon. It's like a water balloon or something that's really bloated, filled up. It's like it's or anything that's like a bloated stomach is full of air, maybe we could say. It's like it looks really full, but it's actually there's nothing in it. And Buddha used metaphors like the hollow trunk of a plantain tree. That I guess plantain trees have like they look like a really big solid trunk, but it's hollow inside. So it's a kind of a nice word that has this connotation of it looks big and full, but there's no actual substance in it. Bloated. We could say form itself is bloatedness. Bloatedness itself, form. No, but boundlessness is kind of nice. But, you know, it's nice in that it keeps us from falling into nihilism, but boundlessness can give a little something to hold on to. So I think emptiness is pretty good, because especially for not letting us get a hold of like kind of like even if we say boundless space, we kind of have an image of that. We can relate to it more than like this absence of all the ways we usually get a hold of things. Absence is another translation of emptiness, which has a slightly more negating quality. Anyway, yeah, we have Ku, Mu, and then we have another word that's going to come up later called Ko. It's sometimes combined with Ku, like Dogen has a fascicle called Koku, Shobo Genzo Koku, that usually translated as space. But empty space, you could say. And both characters both mean kind of like empty and space. But maybe Ko, at least how Dogen's using it, has a little more connotation of just like space. So Dogen kind of critiques it a little later. We'll wait till we get there. So he's like the. Hence, every piece of Mu is a touchstone to articulate emptiness. Emptiness is the capacity to articulate Mu. This is not the emptiness of form as emptiness, according to the Heart Sutra. Form is emptiness, in quotes. Does not mean form is forced into emptiness, nor is it making form out of emptiness. So, of course, Dogen's not criticizing the Heart Sutra. Dogen has a whole fascicle on the Heart Sutra. But he is saying that he maybe is criticizing a certain understanding that I think we can easily fall into. He's kind of saying, well, what do we really mean by form itself is emptiness? We can hear these as two separate things. And in a way, when we talk about it, we can talk about them as two separate things. But here he's saying, we're not talking about, it's a nice phrase, we don't mean that like form is forced into emptiness. It's kind of like, the book's empty, and now we're going to like, to make it into emptiness, we have to kind of crunch it up and like insert it into emptiness, force it into emptiness. There's nothing forceful going on. It's just form itself. This book is empty, right? You can see it, but it's empty. You know, wow, you see it. It's like it doesn't disappear. It's not like you have to obliterate it. I think it's a nice point. Yep. Form is not forced into emptiness, nor is it making form out of emptiness, which would be like either the opposite. So, you know, you're obliterating the book to make it empty, or there's a kind of voidness. Early on in English, they used to translate emptiness as voidness, which I don't think works so well because it implies there's like this vacuum. It's almost like an entity called voidness, out of which something could emerge. So we don't say form. I've been listening to these physics talks recently about how the universe, some latest theories of the universe itself arose out of nothingness. And they have some like, you know, mathematical data. But some amazing things, these physicists, and they sound really just, some of it sounds like Buddha Dharma, or close. Definitely some, you know, anything you say about where the universe came from is some kind of mysterious spiritual implications. But we don't say, in terms of form and emptiness, we're not talking about that this universe of things somehow emerged out of this, like, not even a vacuum, but like a pre-vacuum. We don't say that things come out of emptiness. It's more like just things are emptiness. Things don't become emptiness or come out of emptiness. The book is itself, always has been and always will be, emptiness in its nature. And yet it appears here. This relationship of form and emptiness is an amazing relationship. Nor is it making form out of emptiness. It has to be the emptiness of emptiness is emptiness. The emptiness of emptiness is emptiness. So he's saying, don't worry about trying to crush some physical matter into like a vacuum. He's saying everything is just empty, 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 right? So, and just in his usual style, he's saying, it has to be the emptiness of the emptiness of emptiness. The emptiness of the emptiness is a piece of rock in emptiness. That you can't force into emptiness, but it's, you know, just when he's going more and more emptiness, 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 not form, not form, he said, but it's actually a piece of rock. And so it's the same thing, you know, whenever he's going too far into one extreme, he'll catch it and throw the other direction in there. And this refers again to a Zen story. It's something like a monk asks Shir Shuang, I think, yes, what's the meaning of Bodhidharma is coming from the West? And Shir Shuang says, a rock in emptiness. And then the monk bows. And Shir Shuang says, oh, do you understand? He said, no, I actually don't understand. And he says, I trust that you don't understand. If you understood, it would break your head open. Kind of implying that the heart attack sutra. If you really understood, it will give you a heart attack. If you really understood how a rock in emptiness is the meaning of Bodhidharma is coming from the West, your usual head will break open. or we could hear it as the rock in emptiness will break your head open. So It's a piece of rock in emptiness. This being so, the fourth and fifth ancestors are asking and articulating Buddha nature mu, Buddha nature emptiness, and Buddha nature being. So we actually have this, we have ku as emptiness, we have mu as nothingness or non-existence, then we have u, or being, or existence. So u and mu are usually a pair of opposites. And so we've already had these phrases of like empty Buddha nature, no Buddha nature, and mu Buddha nature and u Buddha nature. So throughout Dogen's kind of like, you know, existence, almost like he's saying the mu and the u of non-existence and existence, the way that those actually are non-dual and kind of working together is emptiness. I think that's how I'm understanding Dogen's, and I would say Indian emptiness teachings also would say that emptiness is kind of like, maybe we could even say like the middle way that unites being and non-being, or the middle way that's free from the extremes of being and non-being. So kind of like U and Mu are this pair of opposite extremes, and emptiness includes both. It unites both. And I think you can find Dogen implying this throughout here. A new story. When the sixth ancestor, Chan Master Da Qian of Mount Cao Chi, went to practice under the fifth ancestor of Mount Huang Mei for the first time, the fifth ancestor asked him, "Where do you come from?" He answered, "I'm a man of Ling Nan," which is, I think, like a province in China. And Ling Nan, Ling is like the peaks or the range, of mountain range, and Nan means south. So I'm from south of the range, Ling Nan. The fifth ancestor said, "What have you come for?" "I've come to become a Buddha," he replied. "I've come here to make a Buddha." The fifth ancestor said, "People of Lingnan, people south of the range, have no Buddha nature. How can you expect to make a Buddha or to attain Buddhahood?" And the story goes on from here, but Dogen's going to start commenting before he finishes the story. "This utterance does not mean that people of Lingnan have no Buddha nature." In other words, people of Lingnan have no Buddha nature does not mean that people of Lingnan have no Buddha nature. Neither does it mean that they do have Buddha nature. It means, man of Lingnan, you are Mu Buddha nature. I think it actually is, I think the Chinese doesn't even have u as being in there. It just says, Lingnan people know Buddha nature, literally in Chinese. Lingnan people know Buddha nature. So he's saying, this doesn't mean that people of Lingnan have no Buddha nature. It means, Lingnan, you person of Lingnan, you are no Buddha nature. Which is, again, kind of going back to the beginning of the essay, we had this thing about having Buddha nature versus being Buddha nature. So it's not so much that these people have no Buddha nature, it's that these people are Mu Buddha nature. When he leaves it Mu here, he's implying, you know, this Buddha nature that's beyond yes and no, the Buddha nature that's beyond all our ideas, that kind of Buddha nature. So instead of blame, it's praise, right? "How can you expect to attain Buddhahood" means, what Buddha do you expect to attain? So again, instead of the criticism that it sounds like is, how could you ever attain Buddhahood, it's more like, how could you attain a Buddhahood that, like, you don't already have? Can you see that? How it's not like this is a common Dogen thing. He reverses a critical thing to make it total praise of you're already complete as you are. Or sometimes he'll maybe reverse it the other way. He just doesn't want us to understand anything in an ordinary way. Few in the past have clearly grasped the Buddha nature's fundamental principle. It's not something that can be understood by followers of the lesser vehicles or by scholars of sutras and commentaries. Literally, it's by followers of the agama. So it's not so much saying shravakas here, it's just saying the Pali canon, basically. The agama is the Sanskrit way of saying the Nikayas. So just from the limited version of the Pali canon, you can't understand this Buddha nature. It's solely transmitted person to person by descendants of the Buddhas and ancestors. A fundamental principle of Buddha nature is that it is not invested prior to attaining Buddhahood, but incorporated upon attainment of Buddhahood. So it's not invested, maybe another translation is, one is not endowed with Buddha nature prior to attaining Buddhahood, which, you know, is the traditional Indian understanding, right? It's like this potential. It's like the seed, like if we look at Buddha nature as the seed or potential, that all beings are endowed with Buddha nature, but it's not fully revealed until Buddhahood. That's a pretty common Indian understanding of Buddha nature. Dogen doesn't like that because it's dualistic, right? And it's saying that, you know, there's some Buddha nature that's hidden. Dogen doesn't like anything hidden. Buddha nature is fully revealed from the very beginning. So a fundamental principle of Buddha nature, according to Dogen, is that one is not endowed with Buddha nature prior to attaining Buddhahood, but is endowed with Buddha nature upon attainment of Buddhahood. Which you could hear as like, you don't actually have any Buddha nature until the moment of Buddhahood, and then you suddenly have it. But I think what he's implying here is that there's a moment of Buddhahood can happen right now, and at that moment of Buddhahood, that's the expression of Buddha nature. Or to put it the other way around, an expression of Buddha nature is a moment of Buddhahood. And this is not like something in the future. So I think endowed, where it says invested and incorporated, those are both the same character, which I think endowed is pretty good. Completely endowed. Gu soku in Japanese. Soku is like completely. And gu is actually zagu. You know, the zagu is the, for some reason it's called a zagu, the bowing, the sitting cloth. Za means sitting, but the gu doesn't mean cloth. It's more like a endowment. It's a sitting endowment. It's like a utensil. It can also mean like utensil or tool, equipment. Equipment can, you know. A zagu is basically sitting equipment. Kind of funny, huh? Yeah, you're not equipped, yeah. It's not something that you're completely endowed with, equipped with, or possess would be another one. It's not something that you're possessed, that you possess before, I think that works here. Not something that you possess before attaining Buddhahood, but you possess it upon attaining Buddhahood. But, you know, we also don't want to think of Buddha nature as a possession, which is something that you have. So he brings in this word, gu here, this gooey word. I think endowment might be a good way to say it. Buddha nature and attainment of Buddhahood are always simultaneous. That's his principle here. the truth, this truth, should be penetrated deeply in concentrated practice. Penetrated deeply is the sankyu Dogen likes to use, like investigate thoroughly. Kind of means study or investigate, actually. Should be thoroughly investigated in kung fu. Concentrated practice is kufu, or in Chinese, gong fu, which literally means, there's all kinds of kung fu in Chinese, but it means like wholehearted, exerted activity. There must be 20 or even 30 years of diligent effort. Which is interesting, right? Because he's saying, if you wish to realize Buddhahood, investigate the conditions of the present time, right? Temporal conditions. So he's saying, it's always happening right now. Dogen is always emphasizing, it's always about right now. So, but here he just throws in, and by the way, just so we don't get too maybe easygoing about it or something, there must be 20 or 30 years of diligent effort. It's not clarified even in the higher stages of bodhisattvahood, or literally it says the 10 stages of the noble ones, the 10 bodhisattva bhumis, which are these, you know, gradations of bodhisattva stages up to Buddhahood in the Mahayana sutras. Which is saying a lot, because, I mean, it's like, it's not even clear there. This is so, so subtle and profound, and yet completely imminent, present now. It's the fundamental truth that articulates sentient beings are Buddha nature, sentient beings are no Buddha nature. So again, that's a pair. Sentient beings, ooh, Buddha nature. Sentient beings, moo, Buddha nature. They go together. The proper way is to study it as a dharma incorporated, again, it's the goo, a dharma one is endowed with upon the attainment of Buddhahood. If your study is not like this, it cannot be called the Buddha Dharma. If the Buddha Dharma had not been studied like this, it would never have continued to the present day. This is just his encouragement to really wholeheartedly practice and study this matter of Buddha nature. Unless you clarify this truth, the attainment of Buddha will be unclear to you and you will never experience it. That's why when the fifth ancestor spoke to teach the sixth ancestor, he said, "Man of Lingnan, you are no Buddha nature. From the time you first encounter a Buddha and hear the Dharma, what is exceedingly difficult to understand and truly grasp is all sentient beings are no Buddha nature." Very difficult. All beings are no Buddha nature. The matter of emptiness is actually quite difficult to understand and grasp. Whether it comes from a good Buddhist teacher or from the sutras, that which cannot help giving joy when heard is all sentient beings are mu Buddha nature. Are you joyful?
Yeah.
Unless your total experience is overflowing with all sentient beings are no Buddha nature, you've not experienced Buddha nature. When the sixth ancestor sought with all his effort to attain Buddhahood and the fifth ancestor brought it about in him, there were no other utterances, no other skillful means. All he did was to say, "Man of Lingnan, you are no Buddha nature." This is kind of implying that that was the moment that awakened him. Doesn't really say that in the story, but you are no Buddha nature. And, oh, no, I'm no Buddha nature. And then his response was, you say no Buddha nature because Buddha nature is emptiness. You should know that the very uttering and hearing of no Buddha nature was the direct and immediate path to Buddhahood. Because it was, he was a Buddha right at the very instant of no Buddha nature. not to have experienced or articulated no Buddha nature is not to have attained Buddhahood, the six ancestors said. And now we're back to the story. This is where we left off in the story. So the story so far is, what have you come for? I've come to become a Buddha. Well, people of south of the range have no Buddha nature. How can you expect to attain Buddhahood? So now six ancestors says, people may have south or north, but Buddha nature does not have a south or north. Classic story from the Platform Sutra of the Sixth Ancestor. And in fact, this is in our merging of difference and unity, refers to this story where we say, how do we say it? There are no southern or northern schools. Ancestors. The teaching of not of thusness.
People's faculties may be keen or dull, but in the path there are no southern or northern.
Yeah. In the beginning, we're talking. What's the first sentence? The mind of the great sage of India isn't going to be between east and west. So he's playing with directions here. So he thought that we could say that's the Buddha nature he's talking about. And people's faculties may be keen or dull. Means like you could be smart or stupid, but that's not the issue. Because there are no southern or northern ancestors. In other words, there's Buddha nature has no north or south. And there was this cultural prejudice at that time in China that the south were people of the south were like these barbarians. They were like rough, uncultured people. I don't think it was Beijing, but the capital was somewhere up there near Beijing in the north, and that was like the cultured area. So these are these kind of tribal people south of the range. So it's kind of like an early Zen statement about non-discrimination, non-prejudice, particularly among different types of cultural prejudice. And in this case, people have north or south, but Buddha nature does not. You should take this utterance and concentrate deeply on penetrating its inner meaning. You must scrutinize these words about south and north directly with mind unbared, or again it's that word, bare, or naked, open mind, for it's an utterance of fundamental significance. It contains an area of understanding that implies, although a person attains Buddhahood or makes a Buddha, Buddha nature does not. I wonder if the sixth ancestor was aware of this implication. Dogen says, a person can make a Buddha, but Buddha nature does not make a Buddha. We have a great classic Zen story about polishing a tile, where with Matsu and Nanyue. Matsu's polishing the tile. Matsu's sitting zazen. And Nanyue comes up and says, what are you doing? Sitting there so still like that. And Nanyue says, I'm intending to make a Buddha. That's it. Same characters here, so I don't think Dogen's going to bring up that story, but there's some of the similar implications. I intend to make a Buddha. It's a kind of literal translation. That's why I'm sitting here. I'm trying to make a Buddha, okay? Don't bother me. And, Matsu, the teacher, Nanyue, the teacher, picks up the tile, a roof tile from the ground, and starts, like, rubbing it. Rough stone tile. What are you doing, teacher? I'm polishing this tile to make a mirror. Well, how can you make a mirror by polishing a tile? How can you make a Buddha by sitting zazen? And the story is connected here because you could say it's a story about Buddha nature. It doesn't bring up the term there, but you could say a person doesn't make a Buddha because Buddha nature is already manifesting. It's like you can't produce Buddha nature. You're already fully endowed, completely endowed, right? So there's something about trying to make something that you already are in that story. And here, Dogen gets a little more subtle by saying, although a person makes a Buddha, Buddha nature does not. So he's kind of saying a person does make a Buddha. Yeah, but maybe he's referring to, the way we usually think of it, like people like Matsu usually thinks of it as like the person makes the Buddha. You can almost say it's a little commentary on that koan about polishing a tile, that actually a person does make a Buddha. And in fact, without getting into it, Dogen does actually turn that story. This is going to be one of the stories we'll look at next year. Because it's a great Zazen instruction story. A person, conventionally speaking, can make a Buddha, but Buddha nature cannot make a Buddha. And what we really are not people, but Buddha nature. I wonder if the sixth ancestor was aware of this implication. Buddhas such as Kashyapa and Shakyamuni, Kashyapa is, the seven ancient Buddhas. He's like number six, just before Shakyamuni in his past era. Kashyapa and Shakyamuni Buddha inherited the capacity that the fourth and fifth ancestors' utterances, no Buddha nature, have to totally restrict ordinary understanding of Buddha nature. He helps us out with some parentheses. So, this is Dogen having a little fun here too, saying that these ancient Buddhas in ancient India and even before India, long before the fourth and fifth ancestors in China, right? But those Buddhas such as Kashyapa and Shakyamuni, they inherited the capacity that the fourth and fifth ancestors' utterances, no Buddha nature, have to totally restrict ordinary understanding of Buddha nature. I hope you're enjoying listening to this. We're basically saying that the ancient Buddhas inherited this understanding from these Chinese ancestors. Yeah. But these are some long sentences, we must admit. They thus had the capacity, when they attained Buddhahood and preached the Dharma, to articulate the utterance, entire being Buddha nature. Which is going back to the very beginning of the fascicle. How then could the being of entire being not succeed to the nothingness of absolute nothingness? So literally it's like, how could the being of entire being, which is, remember at the beginning of this, he was saying, all beings, entire being, have Buddha nature. So it's a very big, all-inclusive, entire being. And succeed here is actually shi ho, which means inherit dharma. And we're usually talking about people transmitting and inheriting dharma from each other. So it's actually how could the being of entire being not succeed to the dharma of the no of no, or the no of complete no. It's a nice sentence. How can the being of entire being, this existence, this ooh of entire being, not inherit the dharma of the no of completely no? Maybe if you see it in the Chinese, it's like the ooh of completely ooh inherits the dharma of mu of completely mu. It's kind of like that. It's just all these different facets of the workings of Buddha nature. Here, kind of saying that that the being of entire being that Dogen was emphasizing many pages back actually is that dharma of being as entire being was transmitted from the no of complete no, or the absence of complete absence. Yeah, I think so. Probably so. And even in English, I think it has the poetry, but we're going through this pretty quickly, right? We're just kind of going right through. But if you I find in my own study of this, because I feel like if there's a sentence that seems like doesn't seem to be doing anything, I try to stop and be like, well, what is he actually saying there? And I look at some different translations. And by slowing down like that, I feel like that sentence, for example, even in English, has a kind of poetry to it, or a kind of beauty to it. There's a kind of like, you could almost like, that's one you could put on your refrigerator door. How then could the being of entire being not succeed to the nothingness of absolute nothingness, or not inherit the dharma of the nothingness of complete nothingness? Hence the words no Buddha nature reverberate far beyond the chambers of the fourth and fifth ancestors. Had the sixth ancestor been a true man at this time, he's kind of like getting a little critical here, he would have concentrated all his effort on these words, no Buddha nature. He should have set aside the nothingness of being and nothingness, and just asked himself, what is Buddha nature, this Buddha nature? He should have sought to discover what sort of thing the Buddha nature is. People of today are no different. When they hear the words Buddha nature, they never question what it is. They seem concerned only with discussing the meaning of whether it exists or does not exist. A thoughtless and ill-considered occupation. The nothingness of all the various nothingnesses must study the nothingness of Mu Buddha nature. So that was a nice little, even though you could say, well, isn't Dogen doing that too? Isn't he get all caught up in concern whether it exists or doesn't exist? But he's doing it in a very dynamic way, where he's not just debating its existence or non-existence. But I think it's true that even in modern America, maybe before we began this year of study of Buddha nature, maybe actually like we hear like everyone has Buddha nature, that's so cool, but we never maybe stop to think, well, what does that mean? What does that actually mean? So we spent this year trying to look at what are the sutras saying about it. It's not so easy, and they often contradict each other. And now we finally reach, what is Dogen saying? What is Buddha nature? It's a wonderful term that can get tossed around very easily without investigating it. So it's a nice encouragement from Dogen. And then he says, even when you're investigating it, don't just debate whether it exists or doesn't exist, which is a big part of the issue of Buddha nature. Right? You maybe remember the Lankavatara Sutra, when Buddha's talking about Tathagata Garbha or Buddha nature, and he's saying, you know, this is not a truly existent self or Atman of these other types of understanding. But it's also not a non-implicative negation or nothingness. So many discussions about Buddha nature have traditionally revolved around whether it exists or doesn't exist. And he's saying, don't get caught up too much in that issue. Actually, just ask, what is this Buddha nature right now? Any questions, concerns, comments? We'll continue next week. Thank you for your attention and diligence to this. Again, we just, you know, if as Alex was saying, if we hear this kind of thing, if we come to an event like this, to just kind of like rejuvenate our investigation of Buddha nature, which probably gets a little like drained over the course of the week. We're probably not constantly thinking of it all week, right? So it's like, oh yeah, Buddha nature, that's right. It's not about ooh or moo, and then some relationship there, and it's not attained. It's not some seed that we have that's going to be realized later at Buddhahood, and all these different aspects. Rejuvenate it and just hear it again and again. And Dogen seems to have some enthusiasm for doing this for quite a few more pages. So at least we can say, well, how can we have Dogen's enthusiasm? Does our Buddha nature have that enthusiasm? May all beings be free from all their ideas of Buddha nature, and thus fully manifest Buddha nature. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become.